welcome to our live stream. We're going to start doing these every Friday at 1:30. This is an exciting new thing that we're trying out, just to kind of engage people and get some conversations going. And I'm joined here today with Dr. Pam, who is an author. She's done lots of different things. I'm going to let you introduce yourself, Pam, if that's all right.
I have a doctorate in management, and I'm a BBA professor, so I do a lot of business, and I'm also a multilingual children's book author. And a speaker. So, but for the most part, I do a lot of writing.
Fantastic. That's so cool. So tell me a bit about kind of what you've been up to recently. So you were telling me you've been really busy, but you always make time, you know, for yourself as well. So yeah, I'm interested to hear kind of what sort of stuff are you up to?
So other than writing the other sets of my children's books that's going to be released next year, which will be four. I have one coming out February 12th, another one May 24th. So I'm trying to get those books wrapped up before the end of the year. And then I have another book that's coming out in November that's an anthology. I also have a goal to have one of the books projects that I've been working on for about 2 years and hoping to wrap that book up by the end of the year as well. So publishing 13 books this year took a lot of time, but I'm kind of happy about that. And then on the other side, being a media journalist and traveling everywhere and hosting events, and yeah, it's been crazy. I just returned from Atlanta on Sunday. I leave for LA next week, so it's never a dull moment for me.
Excellent. So what kind of things are you writing about? Tell me a bit what kind of stuff goes into your books?
Well, let's see. Depending on which one I'm writing, of course, for the kids' book series, the first one that's going to release next year in February is going to be about health and hygiene for children. And then the one right after that will be on manners. And so those two are really, the manuscripts are done. I just have to put those into a format now. You know, children's books are a little bit different to work with, because once you have the manuscript done, the manuscript is actually the easiest part. It's all of the illustration details that go into it, because you have to, every single page, you have to design from colors and backgrounds and, you know, just where you want to place the words. And yeah, formatting the size of the books, which thankfully my books are, you know, the same size. That makes it a lot easier. I try not to add that many more pages to them, so that way I have consistency with the ease of when it comes time to illustrating the books. But the illustration, I'm grateful to work with. Her name is Dr. Amina. She's an amazing illustrator, and so even though I detail all of these things, I do rely.
Oh, Pam, it looks like I might have lost you for a second. I don't know if there is a problem with my Skype connection, or if it's a problem. Oh, sorry, we lost you then for a minute, Pam. I don't know if that was my end or your end, but I lost you for a bit, and you just froze. So you're back now.
Okay, well, you did as well, so I don't know which side it's on. But with the children's book, initially, the illustration takes the longest, but I'm really great and glad that I work with an amazing illustrator that makes things a lot easier for me. So the working on those two books and having those done by the end of the year, to, you know, so that I can start with all the promotions for next year, I'll totally meet my mark. As far as the anthology is lending a voice to being Black women here in America or even abroad, and it's called Black Girl Activists, A Shift in Social Change. I recently published the first Black Girl Activist book, Change the Narrative of Black Women, back in March of this year. And then I wanted to create and have other people's voices in it, so I created a book for that as a visionary author. Outside of that, my other book I've been very quiet about because it's so uniquely written that until I get it copywritten, I have not really said anything. But it's been a 2-year project and a 2-year challenge just because of the unique way that I've been writing this book.
Yeah.
But it's a feel-good book. It's a feel-good book. I really, outside of my children's book, which I don't even really feel like my children's book is fiction, but I don't really indulge in like fiction books. I'm more non-fiction.
That sounds really cool. Tell me a bit more about Black Women's Voice stuff that you're doing. How does that work? What is that all about?
So, you know what, being a Black woman can have challenges, and I think it's about community. I wanted to, one, change the narrative of how women are seen out there. I think that Black women, there's a double whammy when it comes to us, because not only are we women, and I mean, we all fight for equity and equal pay and all of these other things that we need, but being a Black woman, we still are not properly represented. We still lack equity in healthcare. We still lack equity in social justice and political justice and a lot of other areas. And so I think it's time that we stress our voice about those things. But in order to start making these shifts and changes, we have to be vocal, whether it's, you know, verbally, whether it's communicated through, you know, a written medium. But we really need to start being more conscious about what we put out in the atmosphere about us, and that's including perpetuating stereotypes.
Yeah. And I was, there's somebody, I can't remember her name now, actually, but who was talking about kind of the stories that we see, you know, and how it's so important to have a positive narrative, that often we don't see so much. You know, so what she was saying was that I think she's an African lady growing up in Africa, often when she moved to the States, people didn't have the same kind of narrative of awareness of how I'm struggling to kind of bring over what she said. It was so powerful, but I can't repeat it. You're talking about kind of just having people that are the same as you out in your view, you know, that is so important to see that diversity in the media, in the stories that we hear.
It's about representation, having equitable representation out in what we see, whether it's in media, whether it's on television, whether it's in, you know, on the news. You know, we really do lack the representation that we need. I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write my children's book. There are tons of books out there, but we are still, Black children's books are still behind where Black children see themselves in books. I'm not saying they don't exist. They just don't exist in the volume that you would see, let's say, white children in children's books. I think when I was growing up, I don't remember any real books where I got to see myself. And I remember lots of books like Jack and Jill. I read lots of novels, you know, but it was never characters that looked like me. There was not even a lot of TV shows back then that represented, you know, Black families outside of, you had eventually the Cosby Show, you know. Otherwise you'll see, you know, diversity a little bit because you have one Black person or two Black people on a show that's filled with white people. So now, yes, there is more representation on television of people that look like me, but there is not enough representation for Black people that act like me. And for example, you have a lot of reality TV that perpetuates stereotypes that Black women especially are catty and can't get along and, you know, just are loud and filled with drama. And that's not necessarily true for a lot of Black women, especially Black women professionals. And that's one thing that I feel like we need to stop allowing ourselves to be fed and led by what's not real. It's small snapshots here and there to create drama or what looks like drama.
Yeah, and I think that's so important to say that, yeah, that those stereotypes just do not give a full realistic picture of you know, the reality in life, that we're not, you know, we're not stereotypes.
Also being angry, though, I hate that people assume that Black women are angry, even if, you know, we are assertive. The other part is people discount that fact that I would say white men have been angry for centuries, but they have nothing negative said about them being angry. Being angry is an emotion, and we need to identify that if someone is angry, they may have a right to be angry. It doesn't make them less human because they're angry, and it certainly does not make it should not make people cast them into a box to say, oh, you're just this angry Black woman or anything else like that. Because no matter how tactful, I remember during the presidential debates when the vice presidents were, vice president and current vice president now, were debating, no matter how much Vice President Kamala Harris was being tactful in what she said, it was, she's angry, look at her body language, she, you know, rolled her eyes. It was always something, but yet the president at the time was doing the exact same thing while he was in office doing a lot of his press conferences, but nobody ever said anything negative about his actions. That's a problem.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's so important across the board to say that, you know, we're allowed to feel the way we feel. We're allowed to express emotions, but also we shouldn't be, put in a position whereby one characteristic is showing up, is being kind of, you know, for a woman, when we want to express how we feel, we might be seen more as aggressive than a man. And at the end of the day, this is a very, very unfair way to view people, isn't it? That yes. You know, that we're not allowed to have a voice just because, you know, because we're women, is we're just seen as kind of being angry. And I definitely do agree that there is more of that for Black women than white women, perhaps. Pretty much definitely that's the case. And it needs to change. You know, we need to change that narrative. We need to be able to say actually that it's okay for women to be strong and in positions of power and be able to show firm boundaries and be able to express themselves without this negative judgment. And I mean, President Trump at one time when they were all debating, he was incredibly aggressive, wasn't he? But we won't go too much into politics. But yeah, it's so important. And it's coming up and it's coming up, it's World Mental Health Day, I think Sunday. Somebody reminded me today about a statistic that of suicide within the Black male community being quite considerably high compared to other communities, and men in general find it very hard to express themselves in that respect. And I think that's kind of like a flip side of the same thing, that you know, where women are seen as angry when we kind of want to express something firmly, yet men are seen as weak when they want to express emotion. And it's the flip side of the same coin, you know?
I think so. I also would say that in the Black male community, in my experience, I feel as though that it's not necessarily the reason for suicide for Black men. I think it's more of not them appearing weak if they show emotions. I just think that they were never taught how to. The other thing is, I think society really still sees Black men as unworthy in comparison to their worth out here for, you know, just for between work. If they're in, they're coming out of the prison system, it makes it, if you're talking about a double whammy. So already it's not, you know, just from the way that they look can become a problem. If, you know, people can be intimidated very easy. It's, I mean, where, when do Black men have a chance to really feel worthy? I mean, you know, women already are unrepresented, but no one is really stealing our worth from us. You know, we are very strong in that way. And we have a lot of strong men out here, but it's still about society allowing men to feel worthy. When they, like I said, when they come out of the prison system, it's even harder for them to find jobs. It's actually easier for a white man out of prison to find a job than it is for a Black man. And so if you put them, and then a lot of them are falsely accused. And then when they come out, it's still, you know, they still have that stigma that they've been in jail, even if they was falsely accused. I think that's just such a problem that we are not uplifting Black men enough. And then I always say, you know, no offense to, you know, women, but there are a lot of toxic, broken women out here breaking good men. When do Black men have an opportunity to feel worthy?
What change would you like to see? If we could wave a magic wand and kind of heal these wounds, what would the world look like for you, in your mind?
You know, I've never given thought to that. But, you know, for the most part, I think, you know, equity really, really matters. Equality really, really matters. I would love to see the same penalties given to white men as the same as given to Black men. I would love to see, especially the community of, you know, the Black community bridge a lot of the gaps that's open. You know, I would love that we resonate all the positivity, so what comes out is not the negative things. I would love to, you know, to have the people heal themselves. I think that's the other thing. It's like so many people are worrying about other people and what they have going on in their, in other people's lives, instead of dealing with what's in theirs. One thing I will say is that with COVID, people had to find a way to deal with themselves. It wasn't like going out for a few months, being able to indulge in someone else's messy life because, and then their life was messy. No, they had to kind of like, oh my gosh, I have to deal with me now. I have to deal with this relationship that I probably have been avoiding for a long time. I now have to be a parent because my kids are at home and I didn't even want kids. You know, so I think there are so many different dynamics that COVID brought out. And I also think that one of the best things that COVID did come out is the need for therapy for a lot of people. Yeah. Because a lot of people started addressing the traumas that they had when they were younger that they overshadowed with the work that they did. There's a true real thing called a functioning depressant, somebody who can just go and go and go and go instead of deal and slow down for those moments to take care of their mental health.
Yeah, I totally agree. That, yeah, because when we stop to sit still, that's when our brain starts to, you know, bring up all this stuff. And for a lot of people, that's a very difficult place to be, because there is stuff there that's not been processed, not been kind of filed away and kind of put to bed. What occurred to me,
feelings.
What occurred to me when you were talking there is the other day I was out for dinner with some friends and we were talking about all these real life TV shows, you know, and how much they're a draw and what their hook is, and we were kind of thinking of what is that hook, like these programs are so addictive, what is it? And I think, you know, when you were talking there, I just had this ping moment that's what it is. It's getting involved in other people's problems. You know, that when we watch these reality shows, we're escaping into this other kind of other people's stuff.
Perhaps, or it's a way that other people's lives look, you know, not as bad as ours. There's just a lot of reasons. I think some people just need that level of entertainment and enjoy that. I mostly look at it from a journalistic standpoint. I've never really been big on television anyhow, so I might have a time where I'm, matter of fact, I am just, what's the name of the show that I, it's no longer even on the air, and I've just started watching it. I think it's called True Blood. I literally just started watching this, so that's what I watch before I go to bed now, you know, if I'm just laying there or just want to indulge in television when I'm finished working. But yes, I'm just now finding out about True Blood. So I'm like marathoning through it for the most part, but I don't get an opportunity to watch as much television as I like. And, you know, unless I'm doing media and I'm writing something and I have to watch it. But, and I've had the opportunity to watch some really great movies and films and shows. And then some, I'm just like, oh, my God, I'm glad this has worked because it's kind of really boring me. But I typically do not often indulge in, like, reality TV. It's not one of my favorite things.
Yeah, no, me neither. It was just interesting when you were talking, my mind just flipped to that, and I thought, oh, that's maybe part of the hook with those shows, that we're, you know, that there's a bit of cognitive avoidance of our own problems, that we're getting involved in something else. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of wrap up our little meeting today, it's been really great to speak to you, really nice to get to know you on our stream today. If you were speaking to a Black woman who is struggling right now, what would be your one message to her?
Oh, get therapy. I think there's such power in therapy. I think as a friend, I would say, you know, I find value in making sure that my friends are healthy. Every now and again, even up to some of my friends, I might say, hey, wellness check, and check in to people. I talk to so many people, and the very first thing I always say is, have you thought about going to therapy? I think that we need to remove ourselves as friends and allow our friends to get the real help that they need, because that it limits. I think when people are embracing different traumas that they are going through, there should be a breakthrough. And a friend does not have that kind of time to take in all the time to give somebody exactly what they need. It's fine when, you know, in a spurt to help a friend out or just be a listening ear. But the most important thing is to make sure that there's not an underlying issues like depression that's going on. You know, there's not a masked trauma that's going on. A therapist has a way of peeling back the onion on people if they want it. That's the other part. Some people don't want the help. I think some people just want to have that feel-good moment in the moment. And that's not necessarily healthy. I really believe that, you know, we all need to treat our mental health like we do our physical health. And so I'm a really big advocate for therapy for that purpose.
Yeah.
And so that's what I would say to any woman or man that's out there. Normalize the need to go to therapy. Normalize the need for self-care and what self-care should look like. Normalize the need to be vocal about how you feel. We need to be able to have that and pour that into your children, because they set that example. You know, we all adults set examples for children, whether they are ours, our nieces, nephews, any child. We need to be able to open those doors to have these safe conversations about feelings and emotions, because I think doing that, it's potential to lessen the need for, you know, bullying to take place, because a lot of bullies are people who have repressed issues, being bullied at home, never learned how to deal with their emotions, process their emotions. And it's important for children to get that early. It's important for adults to correct those things now. So I would really say, let's normalize as a community of people to normalize the need for therapy, and for these damn insurance companies to see, you know, to be more open to cover, you know, to cover therapy for those people who don't, you know, might not be able to have it or afford it. And, you know, just, it's just so much that we need to work for together to make this world a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah. Access in the UK isn't as great as it should be right now. I mean, the waiting lists are quite high for getting therapy. But I definitely hear what you're, you know, what you're saying there in terms of reaching out, finding, you know, finding that outlet with somebody who is professional, who can be there to help, you know, like you say, unravel those layers of the onion, you know, and really kind of hear and help you kind of get through those memories, those difficult times, those thoughts, feelings. Yeah. And even in a climate where, for us in the UK, the NHS is struggling, there are other services that are able to offer different types of support. And if anyone's watching and you're anywhere in the world and you're having any struggle in finding some services, do kind of reach out on our stream. We'll see if we can help find you and link you up to a services. Definitely in the UK, I can help you find relevant places to go. Outside of that, my knowledge is not so good. But you know, reach out, talk to people, and you know, come into the community, because we're all here to help each other. Thank you so much, Pam, for being here.
Thank you for having me. I definitely appreciate the time.
Great. Well, we're going to be I'm going to be here doing the stream with different guests, and sometimes just myself on a Friday afternoon at 1:30. So do join us next week, and we'll see you then. Bye.